Hi, I'm Brian Hart.
I'm Karen Holman.
And you're listening to
Cool Sheets.
In the coming half hour, you'll hear all about 10 things that we're currently enjoying and using in our lives.
Each of us has exactly 2 minutes to dive in and tell you about one of the things we've chosen.
It might be a book, an app, a gadget, a place, anything goes.
At the end of our 2 minutes, boom, time's up, and we go back and forth until we've shared 10 cool sheets with you.
Cool Sheets is all about fun, interesting, and or useful things to enhance your life.
We broadcast from our studios in Salem, Oregon, on KMUZ Turner, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, or streaming online at kmuz.org, every Sunday from 9 to 9:30 a.m.
Our website, coolsheets.cool, yes, that's coolsheets.cool, has info about all the cool sheets that we list every week if you want to find out more details about them.
You can also interact with us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Here we go with this week's Cool Sheets.
Hello, everyone. I'm Brian Hart.
I'm Karen Holman.
And here we go with another show. We got a little bit shorter one, so I guess we better go for it.
Yeah.
And I'm going to go first. And my first cool sheet is an article. And this is called America on a Stick. This is an article written by Gary He from Eater.com, and it says that Americans did not invent food on a stick, but they invented fast food, which they then made even faster by putting it on a stick. The great thing about food on a stick, it doesn't require a container or a wrapper. The delivery mechanism is built right in, and it is pretty much perfect food. And, of course, the most famous is the corn dog, but there are many, many others. And Gary and his crew traveled to the Iowa State Fair, which is also a really big hangout for presidential candidates because it's a battleground state. And he went there and he talked to Larry Fife, who worked there for 50 plus years in the concession stand. And he said product on a stick can boost sales by as much as 50%. So just putting something on a stick almost doubles it, or almost increases sales by 50%. So as you can imagine, they put everything on a stick. There's 11 different versions of corn dogs. So just 11 corn dogs, there's almost 70 different foods on a stick at this fair. So they tried a bunch. They tried the popcorn ball and M&Ms on a stick, and they said they somehow managed to ruin both of those things. They tried funnel cake on a stick, which seemed like even extreme for even a fair. But they did like deep fried brownie on a stick, monkey tail, which is just frozen banana with chocolate and nuts, chicken and waffle on a stick, peanut butter and jelly on a sandwich on a stick, bacon balls on a stick, which has 9 strips of bacon. There are a few healthier options, but they didn't like salad on a stick. But check out the rest on this article, America on a Stick.
I do.
Was that hard to contain your
yes. Oh man.
Enthusiasm for the sticks.
Woohoo. I do love corn dogs.
It's true. Yeah.
And I
have like a childhood, you know, love of corn dogs because they're not really great for you.
Right.
They took hot dog, already bad.
I know.
Put
it
in
tastes
sweet
so
corn batter.
Yes.
Fry it.
Afterwards, I want to hear more about those 11 different ones. I don't even know what you're talking about there.
Yeah.
Okay. So, going on from there, my next cool sheet has to do with, it's a food book that maybe could be related, and it is called The Zero Waste Cookbook, 100 Recipes for Cooking Without Waste. So, this book I loved because I have this issue with composting, and I guess I've just put up these barriers. I've tried it and things don't seem to work. So I go through these phases of not even composting, and I feel like I waste so much food, and it's really frustrating. And so this book really hits on some things that are very helpful. And there's things that actually I thought you just kind of had to go into compost or get wasted in some way. And they have some great ideas for it. So, for example, I'm making stuff with kale. There's no way I'm going to use the stems. And so fortunately, I do have a dog that loves kale stems. But if he's not around or if I'm just like, okay, you've had too many kale stems, there is some great stuff you can do with it. And they give this awesome recipe for steamed kale stems with chili. And another example is with grapefruit rind, which I would always just toss, and they have a recipe for that. They went through a lot of different experiments of things that you could do in order to have zero waste in your kitchen, and I really appreciated how unique and innovative they were with it. So, really wonderful book. Another recipe that stood out was this shellfish scrap bisque, and it is awesome. And it's with these parts, you know, like when you're making shrimp and you're definitely throwing away a lot of that. And you get this lovely creamy bisque out of it. So I highly recommend the Zero Waste Cookbook.
Whoa, I cannot wait to check that out. I'll have to grab it. Do they have a supplement website? That would be really cool, too. But
ooh, I'm not sure.
Sell the book.
But, something to look into.
And it ties in with my number five. So I can't wait to share that with you.
Awesome.
My second cool sheet is going to be a place, and this place is Slab City, California. Slab City, or the Slabs, is a free campsite and alternative living community located near an active bombing range in the desert city of Ninland, California. It has been referred to as the last free place on Earth, an anarchist RV town, and the last lawless city in the United States. So it was previously a World War II base, and then they kind of deserted it, but all the slabs that they had that they made for the military base are all still there, so hence the name Slab City. This place is kind of what might happen if Burning Man existed forever. It's kind of messy and kind of wonderful and beautiful, and there's art everywhere, and everybody's kind of works, as far as I can tell, on a lot of the trade system and things like that. But it is ungoverned. Just no one ever comes to enforce law. So it is kind of a really big hangout for anarchists. And they talk a little bit about the difference of an anarchy and lawless, because they have laws. You can't do certain things, but it's not enforced by a government, essentially. There's three main places: Salvation Mountain, which I've going to have to probably put as its own cool sheet because it's incredible. It's, I think, a big as a football field or two football fields. Paint everywhere. I think there's 10,000, 100,000 gallons of paint, something crazy that this guy worked on for 20 years. He just added to it every day, and it's just awe-inspiring. There's also East Jesus that doesn't actually have a religious affiliation, but it's all the trash from that area, and they made art out of it. So they kind of reused all the trash that was being left by everybody. And then the Range by Builder Bob is a music venue outside. Check out Slab City.
Oh, I'm so glad you did that as a cool sheet, because I've heard just slightly about it and I didn't know anything about it. So that's great.
Oh my
great.
Gosh. It's really crazy. It is getting popular, which actually might be a good thing. They're trying to do away with it. I think someone wants to buy the land to drill for oil or something lame. So
yeah.
Which is a shame. There's a lot of controversy stemmed around it, that mm-hmm. it's just a big murder meth hangout free for all, which didn't. There's definitely some characters there, but
yeah,
there's both sides of the story.
Yes,
on that.
as there always is. Yeah. Oh, very interesting. Cool. All right, my next cool sheet. This is a website, and this is a website I have a subscription. Is that right? I subscribe. They send me something every day. It is called The Daily Om, and they have meditations on there. They have. Really, what I enjoy the most is just this daily food for thought that they send. And it is, you know, just something to think about. It's always a very short article, maybe three paragraphs, and it's a nice way to start out your day. And it can have anything to do with just, you know, pausing in the moment. And there is this nice article that is vision versus seeing, and just giving you something to ponder for that day. But the entire website is also great to go to beyond just if you get something that comes to your inbox every day. Their website has articles that are similar to those daily ohms that you can be sent, but they also have courses. And the neat thing about these courses is that it is a pay whatever you want. And they have suggested things, but you can choose whatever you think is fair or whatever you can do. And so a lot of the courses have to do with relationships. Some of them have to do with learning to meditate. Some of them have to do with more tidying up your life or anything like that. So it's worth just seeing if there's anything that fits you in there. The founders, so Madison Taylor is one of the founders, and she is essentially daily ohm. She does a lot of the writing, but she brings in other people as well. So she wants to have it be broader than just what she knows. And so many of the courses are other people and the other writers there. So really nice website I've been enjoying for a long time. Daily Ohm.
Whoa, cool. Never heard. So
really?
Can't wait. I don't think so. That's neat.
I feel, you know, maybe it's just because I've been getting it for years. So I just feel like, oh, everybody should know about it. But everything's a little niche.
That's right. So very cool. Can't wait to check it out. All right. My next cool sheet is a YouTube channel. And this YouTube channel is by and titled Jacob T. Swinney. It's a pretty new channel, so he only has 284 subscribers, and at this time of recording, only 5 videos, but he did produce them. I mean, this just came out a week or two ago, so he is posting a lot, and I really hope he keeps going because they are great. He provides great film analysis, and I just hope he keeps making more. This is a great site for filmmakers or film lovers. Each video features one director or film that Jacob feels, or he shows what he feels is kind of their signature filmmaking technique. Each video is only 1 to 4 minutes long, so they're super short, but they're very deep, and you can watch them over and over and get something from them. There's music, but actually no dialogue, so the silence kind of makes it more powerful, so it will just show. Well, I'll go through the video list right now because it's easy. There's only 5. One's called The Master, and it's back and forth, so he talks about the back and forth shots in the movie The Master. Then he talks about the filmmaker Barry Jenkins and his intimate close-ups, and it's just a montage of all the close-ups in a couple different movies of his. And then Christopher Nolan, From a Distance, so kind of the long shot. David Fincher, also From the Distance, so long shots. And then Denis Villeneuve, The Shallow Focus technique. And he does have more description where he kind of goes into what it means and how powerful it is, why it's powerful. Oh, the only one that has sound is Hearing Jurassic Park. So, of course, that has sound. It's just sound bits from the dinosaurs. It's fantastic. Like I said, I hope he does more. Check out Jacob T. Swinney on YouTube.
Ooh, I'm going to share that with Dean. My son Dean, I think, would really enjoy that.
I think so, too.
Yeah. I think I would too, but him especially. Awesome. Thank you. Thanks for sharing that. Okay, my next cool sheet. This is a website and this is a resource. The name of the website is Girl Boss, not to be confused with a TV show by the same name. This is a resource website. Girl Boss is really about, well, more than connections, but let me just put it this way. It's sort of like LinkedIn for the cool kids, kind of, but it's really neat background, and I've actually gotten involved with it ever so slightly, and it looks like it could be really promising. So here's their mission. They originally existed to redefine success for millennial women by providing the tools and connections that they need to own their futures. So I think this was their original mission. I mean, it still is their mission, but I think what has then happened is it's beyond just millennials. So their purpose, they wanted to create a new reality where women can make progress personally, professionally, and in service of others. And so this is where there's this connection base where you do need to register and go on and have a profile. And then you're like, okay, what am I? First thing they ask, what am I good at? So you put out there, hey, what do I know? And then the next thing you put up there under your profile is, what do I want to learn? And then next thing is, who do I want to meet? And you're only allowed a certain number of characters, so it's all really brief. And then from there on out, you are in this website, and then you can, there's all these different facets of it. Are you trying to, say, get into podcasting? Or are you, I'm just trying to start up your business? Or are you trying to make more connections? Or whatever it might be. And it just has this vibe that's super supportive. And part of their mission and values is humor, and it is resourcefulness, and it is supporting one another. So it just looks like a really great thing. If you look at all the leaders of it, they're all fabulous people with great backgrounds. Girl Boss.
Cool. Girl Boss. I like it.
I know. And that's it. That is a nice one of those German words where they take two words, put them together. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Girl Boss.
Girl Boss. All right. My next cool sheet is a website, and this website is called Reasons to Be Cheerful, and it's reasonstobecheerful.world. So it's a little bit different. It's not .com or .org. You can always get links on our show notes on our website, too, if you forget. But this website is really cool. Again, I'm always kind of digging around for good news and things to read that make me happy versus all the other stuff that's constantly bombarding me to feel bad about the world and the state of everything. So this is a good one. It says their little mission statement is, we tell stories that reveal that there are, in fact, a surprising number of reasons to feel cheerful. Many of these reasons come in the form of smart, proven, replicable solutions to the world's most pressing problems. And it says they're a part magazine, part therapy session, part blueprint for a better world. It was founded by David Byrne, who's a Scottish-American singer, most famous for the band Talking Heads. So it's really cool that he has now developed this project in kind of a nonprofit that does a bunch of really cool things. I think this was his first one. Navigation for the menu, there's latest stories, there's editor's picks, most popular. At the top, you can go to each category if you want, which is civic engagement, climate and energy, culture, economics, education, health, science, tech, urban transportation. So tons of categories. There also are collections that you can browse through. Art is everywhere, changing behavior, doing good is good business, education against the odds, pay for what you get, sue the bastards, and transcending judgment. Some sample articles are under education, I'm not that guy anymore, civic engagement, this lake belongs to everyone. Tons of really cool stuff on the website. Reasons to be cheerful.
Oh, that sounds amazing, and like a huge scope of what they're hitting on.
All kinds of different things. So some of the things that you think there's nothing to be cheerful about on, you know, global warming or the environment or whatever.
Yeah.
And then you can go to that category and go, oh, hey, here's some replanting of trees and here's this that's actually good. And I really liked is one time David posted an article and then one of his other writers posted a little bit of a rebuttal and some things. So that was cool, too, that they're also, I think it was all still mostly positive, but he had a little bit of a difference in the ideas. And they thought that that was also a reason to be cheerful.
Yes.
So I love it.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. My next cool sheet. I love my next cool sheet. This is a person. This is a woman, Carol Kay. And I have just recently found out about her, which is crazy because I've been playing music forever. And this person is just an icon, is an unknown musician in history, really. So she is best known as being a bass player. She did start out as a guitar player. So we are talking back in the 40s. She came from a very poor family, and she did get a guitar when she was 14. Or 13. And by the time she was 14, she had gotten a job teaching guitar. And then it went on from there. So she eventually, she became a studio musician. She was, at that time, jazz was a big thing. But then rock started coming in, you know, around the 50s. And she was so good just playing live shows at night that, and at that point she was in LA. Someone came in and said, hey, I want you to play in studio. But then she had had a couple kids and she was divorced, so she had to support her family. And so she became the studio musician. And she is responsible for so many things you would not believe. She is the bass player in The Beach Boys, yes. And she has also on their songs by Sonny and Cher, where she completely turned the song around. It was just flat and she turned it into a hit. She played bass on Hawaii Five-O theme song, Brady Bunch theme song, MASH, Batman, the 1966 song, and all these iconic songs you would never guess. There she is. And it is amazing. I'll post at least one video of that just has these clips and you're like, whoa. And there she is. And I have watched these interviews with her and she is amazing. She just tells the story as it is. And it's never, you know, victim or like, oh, women in music, you know, music history. It is just all about the music and what she was doing. It's so awesome. She is amazing. Carol Kay.
Wow, what a bad mamma jamma. That's amazing.
It is amazing. Well, and you know what she points out is that it's all the musicians, all the studio musicians. You know, she said, you know, a song would come in like Richie. Oh, she plays that La Bamba, Richie Valens, song Bamba. Wow. She's on the bass.
Wow.
She's playing bass. And
powerhouse.
Yeah. And she says, you know, these famous people, the people up front, they would come in with a song and it'd be like, eh. And it was those studio musicians that turned it around and made it a hit.
Yeah. It does not surprise me.
Yeah. So it's not just her being female. It's just the studio musicians. They just kind of got the shaft.
And saved a lot of people.
Yes. Yes.
So. Oh, wow. Okay. Well, cool. Thank you for sharing that. It's always good to get a little spotlight on these amazing people. All right, my last cool sheet. Here's the one that ties into yours. This is a restaurant, and it's called Nola, and it is a restaurant in Finland. And this is a little different because I've never actually been to this restaurant. Usually I would try to go there first, but it's so inspiring that I had to talk about it first. It is a zero-waste restaurant. It is the first zero-waste restaurant in the Nordic region. So not in the world, apparently, but it is in the first one in the Nordic region. It has three owners, Carlos, Luke, and Albert. And their philosophy and I love this, refuse, reduce, reuse, and only as a last resource, recycle. So they refuse any single wrap produce item or plastic wrap produce item. They will not even accept it. There's no waste bin in the kitchen, nor can you find a single use plastic, like I said, anywhere in the restaurant, though produce isn't wrapped in plastic even after they've only used part of it. They have no cling film, no vacuum bags, nothing like that, which is a big deal in a restaurant. Those are always being used. I think they said that the amount of waste that they're saving, the European Union average restaurant produces 70,000 kilograms, so over 150,000 pounds of food and a year, and most of it is totally unnecessary. So obviously they go from snout to tail on their animals. They're very seasonal. They don't have exotic fruits and vegetables that they have to import, like avocados and cantaloupe and things that they can't get locally. They do ship wine, but they have a microbrewery inside. It's pretty pricey. They don't have a menu, so no printed menu, no anything. Their gift cards are recycled, reused paper with poppy seeds in them and things like that. Tons of other things that I ran out of time. Check out the restaurant Nola.
Oh, that sounds awesome.
I mean, you need an excuse to go to Finland, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So here it is.
Yes. There is I don't know if it's zero waste, but it's almost zero waste restaurant in Maui I've been to recently. And they wrap, when you get something to go, they wrap it in banana leaves. And they do stuff like that. It's
very
so
cool.
Lovely. All right. Well, and I guess that's fitting because my last cool sheet is a restaurant and it's in Salem and it is Chula Vista, but it is not the restaurant Chula Vista. I want to talk about the taqueria that's behind it. Chula Vista is a restaurant that's on Lancaster and I'm trying to remember. Sorry, I can't remember the cross street. And it is, I would say the restaurant is fine. It's, you know, it's like many of the others where I feel like they are catering to Americans who want a certain type of Mexican food, and they do that for that clientele. But if you go through the parking lot and behind, there's another smaller building that is their taqueria, and that's where everything gets real and it gets good and it gets authentic. One of my favorite things actually is you go in and, you know, a lot of times you go into Mexican restaurants and they'll offer you your salsa and your chips. They'll bring those out and they'll have, you know, a thing of beans and stuff. And this, they have that sort of thing, but it's self-serve. So you almost feel like you're going into grandma's kitchen and you go over and you scoop up the beans. The beans are unlike any of the ones I've had at the other restaurants. They're, I don't know, it's all just, it was new to me, I guess, and it was really wonderful. Their tacos are great. Chili relleno there was awesome. And it, if you're looking for something fancy, this is not fancy. It's a pretty bare bones menu, but they're super nice and the music is blasting. And it's, I just think it's a really great place to go and hang out and eat. They have all sorts of salsa sitting out. And like I said, that grandma's kitchen feel, it just does have that vibe like you're going and visiting and everyone's hanging out. Last time I went, we were chatting with the people at the table next door about different salsas. And I told them about Fuego del Zorro that our friend David Fox makes, and just really great. So very inexpensive. Great food. Chula Vista.
Yum. I'm hungry already. I need to. I bike by there many times, but I have never gone on my way to my mom's house or on the way home. So I'll have to check it out.
All right.
Cool. All right. Thanks, everyone.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cool Sheets. You can find out more about all the cool sheets we listed by going to our website, coolsheets.cool, and looking for the links.
That's coolsheets.cool. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Leave comments for us on Facebook or email us at info@coolsheets.cool. Bye.
Good morning. You're listening to the Mid-Willamette Valley's community radio station, KMUZ Turner. We're on the air at 88.5 and 100.7 on the FM dial in the Willamette Valley and streaming around the world at KMUZ.org. We're also available with the free TuneIn radio app on your smartphone or your tablet. And this is Gordon Monroe with Firelight Stories, coming to you every second and fourth Sunday of the month at 9:30 in the morning, telling you stories. And today, I'm thinking I'm going to be telling you some folk tales. One that's from China and one that's from Europe. So, if you're ready, I'm ready, and here we go. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, in a time that's not this time, in a place that's not this place, but in that time and in that place, there was a village. And in that village, there lived a man by the name of Hawk Lee. And everybody knew Hawk Lee, because he worked so hard, so diligently at his profession. And he did it without complaint. And he treated everybody with kindness and compassion. And in the evenings, When he was done with his work for the day, he'd go home and he'd do all the chores around the house as well, because Hawk Lee was not married. And everybody was impressed with Hawk Lee. They thought highly of him. He was one of the highest and most honored citizens in that village. But Hawk Lee had a secret. Sometimes when he was done with all his work for the day, when he was done with all his work at the house, he would join a band of robbers. And he'd go to all the richest homes, and they'd steal whatever they could. Now, sometimes one of the robbers would be caught, but never Hawk Lee. And that's the way it was for a long time, or a short time, or whatever time it was. Until one day he woke up and he didn't feel quite right. His face felt a little funny. And he looked in the mirror, and sure enough, half of his face was swollen. And it was getting bigger, and it was getting red. And so he started doing everything that he could think of to heal his face. He put a hot compress on, then he put a cold compress on, then he put a bunch of mud on, then he put all sorts of herbs on, and he took all sorts of herbs. He did everything that he could think of. But nothing was working. And if anything, his face was getting bigger and worse. It got so big that it looked like he had two faces. And finally, when he couldn't stand it anymore, he called for a doctor. And the doctor came, looked him up and down and all around, and then he sat back and he said, "I'm sorry, there's nothing that I can do. None of my cures, none of my herbs, nothing that I know of will cure you. Because you see, unless I'm wrong, I'm thinking that what caused this is that you have done something very bad. And there's only one way to cure something like this. And I'll tell you, but you have to pay me highly." Well, Hawk Lee was a businessman, so he set to dickering. But the doctor had the upper hand, because you see, he didn't care whether he healed Hawk Lee or not. And Hawk Lee desperately wanted to be healed. And so eventually he agreed to the price of the doctor, which was equal to everything that he'd ever stolen. And the doctor told him, "When the moon is full, go to the forest. There's one particular clearing with a huge, gigantic tree right next to it. Go there, and at midnight, the dwarves will come. They come there to dance. They come there to celebrate. Ask them to heal you. But mind you, they'll ask you to dance. And if you dance well, they'll heal you. But if you don't dance well, don't blame me, but things will get worse." And so Hawk Lee paid the doctor, and then he waited until the full moon, and off he went. And he found that clearing, and he hid in that huge, gigantic tree, and he waited, and he waited and waited until it was midnight, and then sure enough, here came the dwarves. wee little people, dressed like kings and queens, with a sparkle in their eye and a smile on their face. And Hawk Lee was so surprised, so shocked, that he just fell out of the tree, went tumbling to the ground, and all the dwarves stopped. They turned and they stared at Hawk Lee. Well, he got up and he bowed down to the dwarves. And he said, "I've come to see if you would heal me. You see, my face, half of my face, is swollen, so swollen it looks like I have two faces. And the doctor said there was nothing that he could do, but that you might be able to help." And the head of the dwarves stepped up, and he said, "We'll see. But first, you must dance. And if we like the way that you dance, we will help. But if we don't like your dance, things will get much, much worse." And so they stepped back, made a clearing for Hawk Lee. And he was a little bit embarrassed. And he tried to dance. He tripped, he fell. He was awkward. He was ashamed. And finally, he just stood there with his head down. And the dwarves said, "That wasn't very good. Go away." And so he did. And when he woke up the next morning, not only was half of his face swollen, his entire face was swollen. It looked like he had three faces. He couldn't believe it. And everybody in town was staring at him. Some of them were pointing at him. Some of them were laughing at him. What could he do? But wait for the next full moon. And when it came, he returned to that clearing in the forest. And he waited until midnight. And sure enough, here came the dwarves, dressed like kings and queens, prancing about, twinkles in their eyes, smiles on their faces, ready to dance, ready to celebrate. And one of them said, "I think somebody else is here. I can smell the smell of humans." And Hawk Lee stepped forward and he bowed down low to the dwarves and he said, "I've returned to see if you could help me. For now, my entire face is swollen, and I was hoping that you could heal me." Well, the chief of the dwarves stepped up, and he said, "We'll see. But first, you must dance, and if we like the way that you dance, we will help. If we don't like the way that you dance, things will get much, much worse." And so they stepped back. They made a clearing for Hawk Lee. And he picked up his heels. And he started dancing like he'd never danced before in his life. Kicking his feet up, his knees, his elbows were flying. He danced and he danced, he danced with great style, with great grace. He danced like nobody was watching. and he danced until he couldn't take one more step. And then he stopped, and the dwarves were clapping and cheering and laughing and jumping up and down, and they were dancing too. And the chief, the head of the dwarves, said, "That was good." And indeed, we will help you. Well, the next morning, Hawk Lee woke up, and his face was completely returned to normal. He was totally and completely healed. And the people in the village, they noticed that, and they wondered about that. They wondered what miracle cure Hawk Lee had found. And for his part, Hawk Lee never ever stole from anybody ever again. But it was a small village, and word went around. Until one day there came a knocking at the door, and Hawk Lee opened the door, and there was a rich man standing there. He'd been sick for over a year, and nothing was helping him. None of the doctors could figure it out. Nothing they tried would work. And he said, "I was wondering if whatever miracle cure you had found could help me." And Hawk Lee said, "It will cost, and you must give me a promise. If I tell you the cure, you must promise never, ever to tell anyone." Well, the man promised, and he paid Hawk Lee. And Hawk Lee told him, "On the next full moon, go to this particular glade in the forest where there's a huge tree standing by its side. And at midnight, the dwarves will come out to dance, to celebrate. Ask them to heal you. They will ask you to dance. And if you dance well, they will heal you. But if you don't dance well, things will get worse." And the rich man went to that glade at midnight, and he danced like he'd never danced before in his life. And the dwarves healed him. And as time went on, when people got ill and nothing the doctors could do to heal them, they would go to Hawk Lee. They would pay him and promise to keep his secret, and they too would be healed by the dwarves. All right. So that was Hawk Lee. That's a Chinese story. Just learned that one. Kind of like it. And now I'm going to dive into another one that I just learned about a woodcutter. And I don't know what it is about woodcutters over in Europe, but there's all sorts of stories about them. And this is one of them. Once upon a time, a long, long time ago, in a time that's not this time, in a place that's not this place, but in that time and in that place, there was a woodcutter. And each and every day, 7 days a week, every single day of the year, from sunup to sundown, he'd pick up his axe, he'd take his two mules, and he'd go to the forest and he'd work cutting wood. didn't matter if it was 120 degrees out or it was 20 below. There he was, working hard in the woods to make a living, to put food on the table for his wife, for his children, to put clothing on their backs. But it was a hard life, and sometimes it seemed they barely had enough to get by. And he worked so long that his two sons grew up into fine young men. And they too picked up an axe and went to the forest and cut wood all day long, every single day of the year. And that's the way it was for a long time, or a short time, or whatever time it was. Until one day, the woodcutter woke up and he thought, I've had enough. I've worked hard all my life in the woods, chopping wood from sunup to sundown, chasing fortune for who knows how long, and fortune just laughs at me and dances out of my way. Haven't even had a peek of fortune. And so I've had enough. I've had enough of chasing fortune. I'm just going to sit here and wait until fortune comes to me. And so he didn't even get out of bed. Well, after a time, his wife downstairs was wondering what her husband was, and she went up there and said, Husband, are you not feeling well? Are you sick? Why are you still in bed? Why aren't you out in the woods chopping wood like you do every single day? And he said, I've had enough of that. I've been working in the woods my entire life chasing fortune, and fortune just stays out of my way, goes somewhere else, visits other people, never me. And so I'm just going to sit here and wait until fortune finds me. And she said, well, what are we going to eat? We only have half a loaf of bread. And he said, that's not my problem. And they went on and on and on until she figured out there's no way he was getting out of bed. And so she went back downstairs to continue doing her chores. Well, a few hours later, there came a knocking at the door. And the wife opened the door, and there was a man from the local village. And he said, well, I was just walking by and I noticed that your two mules are just sitting there outside. They're not being used. And I have a bit of work that I need to do. And those two mules would come in handy. And I was wondering if I could pay you for the use of those mules. And if your husband isn't doing anything, I could use his help as well. And she said, well, you'll have to talk to him. And pretty soon he was upstairs standing in the bedroom talking to the husband, who was still in bed. And the stranger said, I have a bit of work that I need to be doing. And your two mules, they would be handy to have. I'll pay you highly for them. And I've got enough work that I could pay you as well. But the husband said, I've been working all my life, and I'm not getting out of this bed. I've had enough of work. But you can borrow the mules. And so he went downstairs and he took the two mules and he put a big sack, empty sack, on each of the mules and off he went. And he went to a particular glade that he knew about. And he got out a shovel and he started digging. Because there was buried treasure in that glade. And he started filling up those sacks. And he filled them up so they were so heavy that the mules were having a tough time just standing there. And finally, when he was done, he tied the sacks closed, took the two mules, and started walking back down the road. And he was walking along like that when he looked up and he saw down the road there were some soldiers walking towards him. and he kind of panicked. Because in that land, in those times, in those days, all buried treasure belonged to the king. And if you were found with buried treasure, you'd be arrested. You'd be thrown in the dungeon. You'd be put on trial. You'd be found guilty and hanged. And he panicked, turned, and disappeared into the forest. Was never seen again. And the two mules, well, they did what they had been doing every single day of their lives. They just turned and walked home. And pretty soon, the wife, she looked out of the window. She saw the two mules standing there. And she called up to her husband that something strange was going on. He better come down here. And he said, I've told you a dozen times or two, I'm not getting out of bed. I've been working my whole life. And fortune has danced away from me, laughed at me. But now I'm just going to sit here and wait until fortune shows up at my front door. There's no way I'm getting out of bed. There's nothing that could drag me out of bed. And the wife, shaking her head, went to the kitchen, got a kitchen knife. And she went outside. Walked up to the mules, and the mules were just standing there. Their eyes were kind of big. Their legs were spread apart. They were having a hard time just standing. And she walked up, and she cut open those sacks, and out came pouring all of this treasure. There was gold. There was silver. There were jewels. Made the whole yard sparkle. She'd never seen so much riches. She never dreamed of so much riches. And she just stood there for a good long time, just staring at it. And then she turned and she ran inside. She ran upstairs. She grabbed her husband and dragged him down the stairs. And pretty soon the two of them were standing there looking at all of that treasure. And they just stood there for a good long time. And finally the husband said, I was right. All those years I was chasing fortune. And she was visiting other people. She was going elsewhere. She was looking at me and laughing. She was dancing out of my way. She wasn't paying attention to me at all. And so I just sat and waited for her to find me. And that's exactly what she did. And the woodcutter, his wife, and their children lived long, happy, and comfortable lives. All right. So that was the woodcutter and fortune. And like I said, I don't know what it is about woodcutters, but there's all sorts of stories about woodcutters. There's the magic telltale. I've told that one before. Maybe I'll tell it again someday. But it's about a particular woodcutter and what he finds when he comes home. And in the end, he lives a long and comfortable life. And then there's the other woodcutter. And he and his wife, they decide that they're going to work a little bit extra hard, cut a little extra wood, make a little extra money. But somehow, all that extra wood keeps disappearing. Well, he finally finds out what's happening, and he gets rewarded, and he's rich. But he and his wife don't know how to handle it. And they lose all the riches, but in the end, they're doing all right, too. So they're always doing all right at the end. Just got to go through some stuff first. Just got to learn some stuff first. So I've got a little bit of extra time here. So I'm going to tell you a really short story. Once, there was a man who wasn't doing very well. He was on his last penny. His clothes were in rags. He didn't know what to do. He couldn't get work anywhere. And he was just sitting there, and it happened to be outside the local zoo. And the zookeeper came out and saw him and said, "I could use you. You see, the tiger died. And everybody comes to see the tiger. And so I'm thinking you can dress up as the tiger. And I'll pay you, and I'll feed you, and everybody will still come." So that's what they did. Until one day, there was a young boy, and there was a big crowd, and the boy looked at the tiger and looked at the lion in the next cage and said, "I wonder which one is really king of the beasts." And everybody starts hollering, and pretty soon, the young boy opens up the cage door between the two, and the lion starts stalking over. And the tiger, the man inside, starts to cringe because he knows he's not really a tiger, and that's a real lion. And the lion roared, and the man quivered, and the lion stalked right up to him, put his head down, and whispered into the tiger's ear, "Don't worry, I'm not really a lion either." All right. Tiger and the lion. That's what they call a wisdom story. Okay. So that is it for another rendition of Firelight Stories, coming to you every second and fourth Sunday of the month at 9:30 in the morning. And this is Gordon Monroe.
Hi, I'm Alina.
Tonight at midnight on KMUZ, join the DJs from OPB Music in Portland for an eclectic mix of new and Northwest music every night from midnight to 6 here on KMUZ.
Join us on Willamette Wake Up Monday through Friday from 8 to 9 a.m. A bit of news, in-depth interviews, community announcements, and a dash of music. Willamette Wake Up brings you a deeper look into the place you live, whether it's what's happening in state and local government, different ways to view environmental issues, or a focused look on the diversity of people who live right here. Willamette Wake Up will be sure to leave you with new insights into our community. Celebrating the people, culture, and civic life of the Mid-Valley, that's Willamette Wake Up, weekday mornings from 8 to 9 o'clock, right here on KMUZ, your community radio station.
KMUZ thanks Oregon School of Massage, providing professional massage training in the Mid-Valley for over 20 years. Located in Salem, overlooking the Willamette River. Fall classes start September 23rd. On the web at OregonSchoolOfMassage.com.
Thanks for joining us for this episode of Cool Sheets. You can find out more about all the cool sheets we listed by going to our website, coolsheets.cool, and looking for the links.
That's coolsheets.cool. And you can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Leave comments for us on Facebook or email us at info@coolsheets.cool. Bye.